Chapter 4. It took a long time for a fleet formation to respond to orders. Legionis Astartes battle cruisers were gigantic things, kilometers long, like dark cities in space. Building them was the labor of decades, drawing in millions of workers and thousands of mechanicum creation engines. Once sent into the deep void, they continued to grow, to evolve, to change. A ship's own forges were never still, never at rest. Moving one was an exercise in logistics. 1 million crew serfs needed to be at their stations, priming weapons, activating power coils, manning command nodes. Thousands of line officers needed to make their decisions, ensuring the engineerium caverns delivered drive to the thrusters at the correct pitch and frequency. Hundreds of section commanders needed to keep track of the relative movements of other ships and feed 1 trillion auger readings to the cogitators and sensors to prevent collision with other behemoths manoeuvring ponderously in the void. But in the end, even the biggest warship was driven by a single soul, a lone captain, gifted suzerainty by the Imperium's relentless drive towards hierarchy in all things. One voice gave the order to move, to train weapons, to light the black with the world-burning power of lances and torpedo volleys. The order was given. The ships moved. Across the 6th Legion fleet, every ship fired up low-burn engines and sent void shields shimmering down snarl-edged flanks. Escorts raced ahead, engines blazing, machine souls eager for the hunt. The true giants lumbered in their wake, wallowing as they came about before gunning drivetrains into life. The shoal of sleet-grey ships spread out, slotting into assault formations. Fire angles were established in all directions, a three-dimensional sphere of destruction spreading from the centre. The rust-red bloom of the nebula suddenly glowed with 1,000 points of intensity, swiftly extinguished as the fleet pulled up into attack speed. Ahead of them, thousands of kilometres distant and out of unaugmented visual range, the Alpha Legion did the same. Their vessels were similarly gargantuan, similarly bristling with weaponry of almost absurdly destructive potential. Some vessels were adorned with new Legion symbols, edged with sapphire and emerald, the sigil of the striking Hydra. Others still bore the colours of fidelity, crowned with the old chain-linked Alpha-Omega device. As ever with the 20th Legion, nothing had been entirely settled. Everything was still in flux. Bjorn watched the enemy from the bridge of the Hellridder, studying their formation, noting the patterns. The two fleets still weren't visible to one another in the real viewports. His images were the grainy, poorly resolved feeds from long-range augers. He didn't feel any particular emotion. Prospero had been the same. A task, much as countless others that the wolves had been given. Something to be carried out efficiently. Only later had the dull sense of wrongness fallen over them.
"We are outgunned," he thought.
He performed rough calculations in his head and knew that the strategios in the flagship would be reaching the same conclusion. They would already know how many more ships the Alpha Legion possessed and how quickly their lethal complements could be brought to bear.
"We are outgunned," said Godsmote, just a fraction behind, standing next to Bjorn on the command plinth of the bridge with the rest of the pack.
He was in his armour, the dirty grey of it streaked with bloodstains and ritual kill marks, and his voice came tinnily from behind his helm's death mask.
"Looks that way," agreed Bjorn, studying the incoming feeds.
"Wise to meet them head-on?"
"Probably not,"
Godsmote grunted. No use questioning a decision once it had been made, and the Wolf King hadn't been in any mood to back down from another fight, no matter how badly mauled they were.
"We are a blunted blade," thought Bjorn bleakly. "We have been used too much." All legions had taken casualties during the Great Crusade, but some assignments had been bloodier than others. The wolves' numbers had never been among the highest, a feature exacerbated by their aggressive drive to limit recruitment to Fenris and their constant deployment, usually self-appointed, to some of the most arduous war zones of the campaign. Prospero had hurt them further, perhaps more than they truly understood.
"I wondered if it would become easier," Bjorn mused.
"If what would?" asked Godsmote.
"Killing another legion. Killing kinsmen."
"We're not there yet."
"Yes, we are."
Bjorn already saw how it would play out. Comms would be transmitted from the Hrafnikol to the Alpha Legion flagship, demanding that they stand down. No answer would come back. The Space Wolves would hold fire until the last moment, right up until the range of the main lances had been reached, issuing demand after demand. Then the killing would begin. Hellridder would play its part. It was built for fast attacks, agile and weapon-heavy, sparsely crewed and with scant berthing for anything but fuel and ammunition. The entire legionary complement on board was six. A lean pack, but one in command of an agile hunter-killer.
"They're moving to an attack spread," noted Godsmote, glancing at the screens.
"Strange, isn't it?"
Bjorn watched the pulses of green light crawl across his tactical readout, creeping towards one another with deceptive slowness. The velocities were now incredible.
"What do you know of the Alpha Legion?"
"Not a lot," said Godsmote.
"Ever heard of them mounting a major fleet action?"
Godsmote paused.
"Should I have?"
Bjorn shrugged.
"I've never heard of it. Not really what they're known for."
To the extent that anything was known about the Alpha Legion, it concerned subtlety, subterfuge, and infiltration. Gilliman famously thought little of them. Russ, less famously, thought much the same. They didn't like getting their gauntlets bloody, it was said. Once the news had come in from Istvan V, once it had been given time to settle, some treacheries had seemed more obvious than others. The World Eaters he could understand, the Iron Warriors similarly, and so too Mortarion's strange Death Guard. But the Alpha Legion, something about their switch of allegiance bothered him. It felt unsound.
"Why are they here, doing this?"
Bjorn asked, speaking as much to himself as to Godsmote. Godsmote smiled bleakly.
"Looks obvious."
Bjorn didn't smile. Even before losing his hand to the demon, he had never smiled much, now less than ever. He knew that the Pax laughed about it, poking fun at his unremitting seriousness. But they could laugh as much as they wanted. He felt a weight on his soul sometimes, like an anvil resting on his chest. He'd sit on the edge of the fire circle while the others sang or recited, listening but not speaking. For a long time he'd not envisioned himself becoming an integral part of the Legion, just one of its fringe elements, destined to die in some blood-drenched campaign on some world or other. Now that feeling had left him. Oddly, just as everything changed, his old sullen desire for withdrawal had ebbed, replaced by something else. After time long spent on the fringes, Prospero had begun to draw him into the rout's heart. The Primarch knew his name now. The sagas mentioned him, guaranteeing a kind of immortality in the cold halls of the Eight. It felt as if the centre of gravity had shifted, dragging him closer towards the savage embrace of a legion whose temper had always contrasted so badly with his own.
"It is not obvious," said Bjorn. "Not to me. There are mysteries here."
The lights on the bridge began to lower. From somewhere far below, a warning chime sounded. Guns were being hauled into position. Firing solutions were being calculated. Far ahead, in a slender line on the very edge of vision, the first pinpricks of light from the enemy positions crept into the real viewers, like a string of jewels slung against the void.
"Well, that may be," breathed Godsmote, his voice already heavy with relish. "But here they come. And for myself, I wish only to discover how they die."
Yesugai leaned closer to the viewport and watched the plains of Chogoris fall away into a pale blur. For a few moments after takeoff, he'd been able to see the Cum Carta Monastery laid out below him in all its sprawling glory. The old towers of the Kitan, the training grounds, the gardens ripe with plum trees. Gold pinnacles had glinted in the sunlight. Soul pennants had snapped in the stiff breeze. Then it was gone, lost in a haze of pale greens and browns. He watched the Altak stretch out, spreading out across the continental mass, devouring everything. Only a few wisps of cloud scudded across the emptiness, ephemeral against the vastness. All worlds looked much the same from space. The colours varied, but the real differences were all hidden in ground-level details. The smells, the feel of the gravity, the taste of the wind. Yesugai had trod upon 100 different worlds, and none had ever really resembled another. Humanity had spread itself across a bewilderingly wide range of habitats, conquering each one with the remorseless patience and ingenuity that was, so he had come to learn, the mark of the species. Soon, Chogoris ceased to look different from any other planet, a blank sphere hanging in the uniform blankness of starlit vacuum, its distinctiveness lost. Yesugai turned away from the viewport and settled back in his chair. He never enjoyed leaving the homeworld. Before the Master of Mankind had arrived and brought the Great Crusade to them, Yesugai had been quite content with the limits placed upon them by a single world. They had enemies to fight, kingdoms to lay low, prey to hunt. He had never wanted for more than that. The Khan had been the same. He remembered talking to him once as the moons rose, back in the old days when Cum Carta had been a tenth the size and built of red-tinged stone rather than underpinned by rockcrete and steel.
"What will we do when all enemies are conquered?"
Yesugai had asked, feeling warm dusk breeze against his skin. The Khan stood on the parapet, his long, lean frame proud against the lowering light. By then he was the master of the whole continental mass, the conqueror of the Khinzan, the Kho, and the Khitan, the Neomen, and 100 other nations.
"Let them go again," he said calmly.
He flexed his fingers against the red balustrade.
"I have no desire to become their master."
Yesugai laughed.
"Then why conquer at all?" "Because we must."
The Khan looked up into the heavens. Perhaps he knew what would be coming soon, the arrival that would change everything.
"We hunt because we are hunters."
His expression became sour.
"There is no point in saying, this is it, this is the end. You have achieved what you set out to do.
The world will not remain still around you. You move with it, or you are swept away."
Yesugai looked up at his master. The Khan's physicality had never lost its power to impress. Everything about him was demanding. Some of the men of the Ordu were already calling him Khan Tengri, tantamount to bestowing godhood. Yesugai couldn't blame them. They'd all seen what he was capable of.
"I do not know if I believe that,"
Yesugai said lightly.
"You rule the land from here to the ocean. You will not give it up."
The Khan turned his eyes on Yesugai. Those eyes, too, never lost their terrible power.
Yasugai remembered when he'd first seen them, recovering in a fire-warmed gear after the powers he'd been born with had nearly killed him. They were like a god's eyes, deep-set, unconsciously scrutinizing, pitiless.
"I will one day," the Khan said softly. "Do you know what I fear, Tagutai?"
"Nothing."
"Only beasts fear nothing."
Yasugai smiled.
"Decrepitude, then?"
The Khan nodded.
"Oh, you do know me, Zadjin Agur."
He looked back out over the plains.
"Decay is the enemy. Every emperor we have deposed has been fat. They reached the limits of their power and sat back on golden thrones, satisfied with what they had done when they still had vigor. By the time we came for them, they could barely lift a Tulwa."
"You will not become fat," observed Yasugai. "I do not think you are capable of it."
The Khan shrugged.
"My body, perhaps not. But my mind..."
He seemed to shudder, not from the cold, it was still warm, but from a lack of motion. Yasugai had noticed it before. He needed to be moving, out on the saddle, chasing something down.
"There is only one unforgivable lie. That is the lie that says, this is the end. You are the conqueror. You have achieved it, and now all that remains is to build walls higher and shelter behind them. Now, the lie says, the world is safe."
The Khan shook his head.
"All emperors are liars, Tagutai." "Safe?"
He spat on the balustrade.
"No fouler word exists."
That exchange had been over 140 years ago. Since then, of course, everything had changed. But Yasugai had never forgotten it. Sometimes he wondered whether he might ask the Khan about it again, seeing if he had revised his views. He doubted it. The Khan's moods and temper seemed burned into him, like the Talskar imprint on his left cheek. The lander neared its destination and banked around for the final approach. As the star field wheeled past the viewports, Yasugai caught a glimpse of the transport he'd requisitioned, the Legion frigate Sickle Moon, its spear-shaped profile standing starkly, picked out by the white livery and gold-red trim, the lightning-strike sigil, the mark of the Khans for 1,000 years, had been painted proudly along the forward flanks. It looked fast, and that was good. It would need to be. The lander swept up towards the frigate's dorsal hangar, guided by twin lines of strobing lumens. Once touched down inside, Yasugai stirred himself, got up and walked down to the lander's embarkation ramp. He took a moment to smooth his robes and collect his staff before emerging out into the hangar. Appearances were important, and despite everything that had happened, the Legion still placed store in its storm seers. The lander's outer doors hissed open. The hangar was lit brightly, as was usual on 5th Legion warships. Every surface was highly polished, glistening softly under hanging lumens. The interior smelled of steel polish, engine oil, and phalang, the Khitan ceremonial incense. Two lines of white scars stood to attention on either side of the ramp, clasping their fists across their chests in the ritual greeting.
"Still they respect us, even after all this foolishness," thought Yasugai as he descended.
He found the display of respect touching.
"I am glad to belong to such a legion."
The ship's commander inclined his head as Yasugai approached.
"Welcome, Zadjin Agur," he said. "You honour us with your presence."
Yasugai bowed in turn.
"I have taken you away from important duties."
"You have saved us from tedium. We are happy to have you.
The two of them walked together towards the hangar's exit. Behind them, servitors began to unload the lander, hauling grav crates from the cargo bay.
So, can you get me to Trondax? Asked Yasugai.
The commander gave an equivocal gesture.
We will try, but you know about the storms. The navigator says nothing can be promised.
When has a navigator ever said different?
Well, that is true.
And you have me with you now, added Yasugai. It has been a while since I peered behind the mask of heaven.
Now, this is a good ship, said the commander firmly. A harmonious ship. 20 major engagements since first launch and still harmonious.
That was reassuring. Trigorian captains had taken all sorts of esoteric concepts up into the void with them since their sudden and enforced leap in technological progress, and ancient ideals of harmony and balance still counted for a great deal. They reached the far end of the hangar, and Yasugai paused before a set of double doors.
"What is your name, Commander?" he asked.
"Lushan."
"Kitan?"
Yes, from Xiam.
"From the beginning, then, Lushan. Let there be no secrets between us. This turmoil is not natural. I do not understand its origin, but it makes our star speakers deaf and dumb. It silences the galaxy, and it masks the Primarch. Defying it will certainly be dangerous. I say this only so you are aware."
"All of us are prepared," said Lushan,
looking perfectly unconcerned.
"We can head out to the jump point on your command."
"Good,"
said Yasugai, opening the doors with a gesture.
"Then do so now. My dreams have been troubled. Until I am reunited with the Kargan, I fear they will become worse."
He gave the commander a weary look.
"And it would be nice to have some sleep."
Torgon strode towards the Starspear's command deck. He was curious. It wasn't common for Jemulan to call the Khans together. The Noyan Khan preferred to run his fiefdom in the Trigorian manner, loose control from the centre, maximum autonomy extended to the various brotherhoods. Now, though, the order had come in, and his commanders were hastening to comply. Those stationed on other vessels had taken shuttles over to the Starspear. Some, still located in the outlying regions of the cluster, had arranged to be present by secure lithocast.
"What do you think?"
asked Manju, his lieutenant, walking alongside him. His face, light-complexioned and framed by blonde hair, was creased with uncertainty. It was a markedly youthful face for a space marine, one upon which the Legion scar looked oddly out of place.
"No idea," said Torgon.
He'd heard rumours that the astropathic veil was beginning to fracture, that some messages were beginning to get through at last, though nothing firm enough to place any confidence in.
"The new assignment,"
offered Manju, his tone giving away his hope.
"It would be about time."
As was typical, the White Scar's straggling Legion structure made coordination difficult. Many brotherhoods were still engaged in the last gasps of Xenos cleansing out in the far reaches. Others had been in their ships for weeks, hanging in orbit over the white world with nothing to do but practice their bladecraft in cages until fresh orders were issued from the Swordstorm. The Trigorians seemed happy enough with that. They were used to their inscrutable Primarch and his impulsive decision-making. The Terrans took it harder, at least those who hadn't long resigned themselves to the Legion's haphazard methods of command and control.
"I thought they'd improve things," said Manju. "The Terran they brought in."
"She's just one woman," said Torgon, smiling wryly. "She can't change it all."
They passed from the corridors into a capacious antechamber, crowned with a high dome of glittering crystal. Fleet attendants bustled across the floor, clutching data slates, stepping clear of drone-like servitors in their paths. On the far wall was a Legion lightning strike, inlaid in alabaster and slate. The sigil of the Horde of the Earth stood next to it, a stylized mountain peak, modelled, so Turgon had been told, on Temudan, one of the holy peaks of the Legion's homeworld. Below the sigils were the huge doors of blast-grade adamantium that led into Jemulan's audience chamber. Two warriors of his keshig stood on either side of the entrance, carrying heavy glaives. Their faces were hidden behind sloping grills of Mark III power armour, the helms crested with horsehair plumes dyed black. Other summoned Khans were making their way through to the chamber beyond. Their shoulder guards carried their Brotherhood emblems, a double-headed arrow, a falcon, a dawn sky. At the sight of the last one, a golden sun with spear-tip rays, Torgon's gaze met Hibu's. Torgon nodded his head fractionally in greeting. Hibu did the same. Once they were through, the blast doors shuttered closed behind them. The chamber glistened from reflective white walls. Bronze-caged lumens hovered above head height. Perhaps 70 white scars stood on the tiled floor, though some outlines flickered with the crackling aura of hololithic projections. A low murmur of expectant discussion rippled across the gathering. Jemulan entered the room last and ascended the dais at the far end. The Noyan Khan was as imposing a presence now as he had been when he had presided over Torgon's ascension. The many intervening decades had only hardened his ravaged, hawk-sharp face, making the zigzag scar on his face even whiter. His battle plate was ancient, reverently maintained but carrying its own sets of cherished burns, chips and dents.
"Brothers," he said,
turning to face the crowd and bowing perfunctorily. His face looked haggard.
"My honest thanks for attending at such notice. I know you are diligently preparing for the next stage of the crusade, wherever that might be."
Torgon and Manju exchanged brief glances. Jemulan sounded exhausted, as if fresh from combat. His voice, for the first time Torgon had ever heard it, gave away the old warrior's age.
"I would not have called you together had it not been of signal importance," Jemulan continued, sweeping his weary eyes across them all. "I wish the news I have to give were better. I wish it were not..."
He faltered, then recovered himself.
"I have come from the Swordstone. I have spoken to the Khagan. He wished me to tell you all how proud he is of your achievements here. He knows how much blood you have shed. He told me it will be remembered."
"Something has happened," thought Torgon, narrowing his eyes. "He can barely bring himself to tell us."
"As you know, the astropaths have been out of contact with the Imperium. The darkness is lifting now, though only partially. For reasons we do not understand, star speakers on the flagship are receiving visions again. Our interpreters have been working hard to decipher them. Some images are still hard to discern, but at least we are getting them."
Jemulan paused, seemingly unsure how to continue.
"Well, this is good news, surely. Why is he so reticent?"
"I hardly know how to tell you what we discovered," said Jemulan. "Since there is no way to tell it well, I will tell it plainly. The Great Crusade has been split. Treachery. The unthinkable has happened. A Primarch has fallen into madness. A world lies in ruins, and loyal warriors have been butchered. We do not know how many legions are involved. We do not know why this has happened. But we are being asked to intervene, to leave Chondax.
Jemulon's words were as heavy as lead ingots. No one in his audience spoke. No one responded. Torgon, just like the rest, stood dumbfounded. A collective paralysis seemed to grip the chamber.
As I speak to you, others across the expedition are being told this news. Our orders are to accelerate the muster and bring the fleet back to a war footing. There is much we do not know yet, but this much is clear. Heresy has emerged among the Legiones Astartes. The only remedy is to root it out. This means war. This means going after those who, until this day, we called brothers. Their guilt is clear. They are murderers. They are faithless murderers.
Jemulan spat the final words out with venom, his gauntlets clenched, trying to still hands trembling with fervour. The crowd began to murmur again. Their initial shock gave way to a terrible curiosity, the basic mortal need to have questions answered, to know in all details what had taken place. Some instincts had not been quelled by the rigours of their transhuman conditioning. "Who?" rose from the floor, first in lone voices, then as a chorus. Torgon found himself joining the clamour almost by default, adding his voice to those raised in outrage and disbelief. "Who?" Jemulan raised his hands, stilling the tumult. His expression remained dark.
"This is what we know," he said,
as the chamber fell quiet again.
"The homeworld of the Thousand Suns has been destroyed. The Legion annihilated. Magnus the Red is slain, his back broken, and his city lain waste."
Jemulan looked as if he half disbelieved what he was saying.
"These tidings come from the hand of the War Master himself, bearing his signs of surety," he said. "They are the first authenticated sendings we have received since the veil fell, and though much remains to be determined, at least now we know the name."
Jemulan's dark visage swept the chamber, animated by pure fury, the fury of a betrayed comrade in arms.
"Only death awaits the traitor," he proclaimed. "So shall it be for Leman Russ, betrayer and heretic."